Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I'm closely following the Marcus Mariota saga, and by saga, I mean, where is he going to suit up next season? Will he get a starting job in the league? What's with the Raiders in Las Vegas? Las Vegas, home to several conference tournaments, including the Pac-12 tournament, Mountain West tournament, WCC tournament. Ed Graney, fine columnist at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, friend of this show, joining us now. Ed Graney, I really appreciate you, man. I'm sorry for dragging you on this show, but we got to hear about Vegas.
Appreciate you having me. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, Marcus Mariota, what's the feeling in Vegas as far as, you know, is he going to be with the Raiders next year or what happens?
I think the feeling is right now they've tried to shop him. Here's the thing about his contract, though. So he's a little over a $10 million hit next year to a cap if the Raiders keep him. And they need so much help defensively in other places. I just don't know if they can go another year with two quarterbacks who make as much as Carr and Mariota would be combined. So the problem with the contract is, though, I think they're trying to move him. If you take him on as a bridge or as a starter, if he starts, I think, more than 60% of the games, that number doubles. So you're not really taking him on at $10 million. You're taking him on at over $20 million. And I think what most teams are doing is saying, look, they're kind of betting against the Raiders and saying, you're not going to keep him. You're not keeping him at $10 million. So what we're going to do is we're going to let you release him, and then we'll deal with him on a contract, whether he's a bridge or a starter or whatever. So that's what I think is happening. I don't think anyone's going for a trade right now because they assume the Raiders are going to have to let him go because they're just not going to pay him $10 million to be a backup. I mean, they, like I said, defensively they're awful, and they've got to spend money elsewhere with this new cap. So I think that's what's happening. I think eventually it probably leads to him being released, and then teams obviously can deal with him and his agent on their own contract and their own terms.
He almost, you know, he pretty much got a year off. We saw him in the one game against the Chargers. He came in. He was not, you know, made some plays. I think that was probably good for him, given the blender that he was in Tennessee with all the coaching changes. But what was your impression of Mariota as you got a chance to see him up close?
I thought he was really good. I mean, I wrote right after that game they should start him the rest of the year. They were out of the playoffs, and they really needed to know, you know, what they had in him, and they just didn't do it. He stayed with Carr the rest of the way, and I thought that was a mistake because he knew what you had in Derek Carr. And if there was any chance, you know, you'd move on from Carr, and that's always kind of been the offseason rumor around here, I thought they should have played Mariota the last two games and just said, look, let's see if he can play well the last two games. Now, if you have three games of evidence, maybe you do go his way and you're not paying him that much. But they didn't. So they only got the one game when he came in for Carney. I thought he was very, very good. Like I said, I think if he's released, there'll be more than one team lined up for him, because I think at that point, you know, you can negotiate with him and you can pay him, you know, in a range of, you know, what you feel more than just taking on that contract with those incentives. So I thought he was really good. I wish they would have played him the last two games, but they didn't. And I just think at this point, I think they'll move on from him. I would be shocked if they had a backup quarterback making over $10 million next year when they have so many holes elsewhere.
Ed Graney, our guest, sports columnist, Las Vegas Review-Journal, also hosts a radio show Monday through Friday in Vegas, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. You're busy guy, Graney. The Raiders' trajectory, does it feel like John Gruden's got it figured out, or is it still a question mark?
Oh, no, it's a huge question mark. I don't think he has it figured out at all. I mean, they've been horrible in free agency. Just this week, you know, I'm sure you knew Trent Brown was moved to New England for a fifth. Three players were signed in the free agent class of 2019, of all the players. LaMarcus Joyner, the DB, Trent Brown, the offensive lineman, and Tyrell Williams, the wide receiver. That was in 2019. They earned a guaranteed $80 million from the Raiders, and they're all gone by 2021. They've been terrible in their free agency decisions. They, you know, Littleton's still a question mark. Nasib's still a question mark from last year. They have not, Ian Mayock have not made good calls free agents wise. And now again, this year, they're going to have to go get help. So we can see if their, you know, their decisions improve there. They haven't been great in the draft. Damon Arnett, Jonathan Abram really underachieved last year. You know, Josh Jacobs has been fine, but you know, in the NFL, you can find a running back. Nothing against Josh Jacobs, but you can find a running back. I mean, look at all the guys who, you know, are not going to be brought back to their teams this year, who are much better than Josh Jacobs. So there's a lot to prove for John Gruden and Mike Mayock. I think they believe in what they do. I think in a league with a lot of egos, they have two of the biggest ones, and I think they believe what they're doing is right. But, you know, what's your record and how have your moves worked out? And at this point, it hasn't been very good.
It's been, you know, a year since I was in Vegas, Pac-12 tournament, everything got shut down. How has that city responded or been? What's it been like to be in that in Las Vegas during this last year?
Very strange. You know, just surreal, the events. I was at the NASCAR last week. They brought out, I think there were like 10,000 fans, and in a speedway that seats 80, you couldn't really tell. You know, the conference tournament, this is where I really think you see the difference. And it's too bad because, you know, the Mountain West is a non-Power 5 league, but I'll tell you what, the Friday night of the Mountain West tournament back in the day, whether it was Kawhi, Jimmer, whoever, that place at the Thomas Mack was 18,000 volt, and it was as loud as anything I've ever been in. The Friday night of the Mountain West, when that league was good and they had three or four teams going into tournament, was amazing. I was there yesterday for UNLV. I'll be there tonight, and there's no one in the building. And you're just sitting there up in the rafters with, you know, place glasses, you know, separating you and the next rider, and it's still surreal as ever. I mean, I'm glad they're having the tournaments. I'm really glad the March Madness is back because you couldn't go 2 years there and lose that much money. The NCAA would just be – I'm not a big NCAA guy, but I didn't feel bad for them if they went 2 years without an NCAA tournament, as I would for basketball fans. So very surreal to be at events in Las Vegas the last year and not have anyone. Very surreal to watch an NFL team in its first year in an Allegiant Stadium with nobody there. That was very strange. So I think everyone's hoping, you know, this time next year everything's a little different.
Yeah, and what about the Strip? Is the activity returning to the Strip?
Yeah, it is returning, and people are opening up more and more. They still have mask mandates and all of that. I'll be really interested, and I'll probably go out in the town next week to see how it is on Thursday, the first day of the NCAA tournament, because that is, if you're not at a game, you want to be in Vegas in a casino the first day, not only at the books and the gambling, like at the Westgate. It's just a madhouse. We do our show from there, and it's awesome. Thousands of people lined up all day. Now, that'll be a telltale sign next week of how much it's changed and how much different it is. When the NCAA tournament is on and Vegas is kind of somewhat open, that'll be interesting. But they're opening up more and more. Restaurants are opening up more and more. The nights now can now have 20% capacity. It was 15. So the governor, with each month, is raising capacities at sporting events along with the health district. So they're slowly bringing people back. And like I said, you know, I think, you know, people are getting vaccinated around town. You know, our numbers in the paper seem to think that people are getting vaccinated. And I think people are, you know, hoping that sense, you know, within 6 months to a year that Vegas is kind of back to what it was.
Ed Graney, columnist, Las Vegas Review journalist with us. You got NHL now in Vegas, NFL in Vegas. You know where I'm going. Portland would like an MLB team.
Yeah.
Tell me that Las Vegas has the interest in MLB is waning because of all those other things.
Well, I think their interest is always going to be the NBA first, although Silver said recently there's no plans to, which, you know, after a pandemic, you better say that because you've lost a lot of money. And the last thing, I don't, even though an expansion deal would bring you a lot of money back in, I think at this point you're going to calm those stories. But so the NBA would always be their preference. But there's a city in this town called Henderson, and they want sports more than anything. They're building a facility for Mark Davis. That's where his football facility is. He now is the owner of the WNBA team. They're building them a facility. The Knights – Triple-A team, the Silver Knights, are in Henderson. They're building them a new arena and a new facility, and they want baseball. You know, when the rumors of the Diamondbacks moving were a couple years ago, I went to Arizona to do a story on it because Henderson was they admitted that they had talks with Henderson. Henderson admitted it also, that there were talks about bringing the Diamondbacks to Vegas. So if there's a chance, people would have to probably battle Henderson. They're willing to put up a ton of money to get a team there. And it's more, you know, the fighting of T-Mobile Arena in the middle of the strip with the Knights. And Henderson wants to be a major player in sports. So I think if it's a possible, they'll at least be in the conversation given what happened with the Diamondbacks a few years ago.
College basketball, March Madness is always a little unpredictable. But we saw Duke essentially wave the white flag, throw in the towel. What do you make of March Madness as this pandemic sort of is still ongoing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping the reports we hear that Indy will be as closed down as possible for, you know, protecting against something like that happen to Duke. I mean, like I said, I mean, it would just be it'd be good news for nobody if, in fact, you know, we're, you and I have been in many Final Fours, and let's say it's Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, and whoever, and some kid pops positive and teams are out. I mean, because once the tournament starts, you know, that's it. As we both know, you're out, you're out. I mean, before the tournament, days before, you can have these teams that are going to fill in if you get a positive. So I hope that doesn't happen. I would hate that for everybody. And yet, if you read reports, they're going to do everything they can once those teams get to Indy not to have a Duke situation and just to really lock these kids up and try to get through a tournament. So I hope it happens like that. I don't think anyone wants teams to have to forfeit out or get to a Final Four and something happen. I mean, that would just be – it'd be terrible for everybody.
Ed, before I cut you loose, you know, you're getting to see some basketball in the conference tournaments that are there in Vegas. Are you seeing anything you like, or is it too early?
You know, I'm going to go over the Pac-12 tomorrow night. I want to see Oregon. I'm sure they'll get there, and I want to see them for sure because I always want to see his team. So I think he's a great coach. You know, SC has one of the best players in the country. You know, the Mountain West, San Diego State's good again. But yeah, you haven't really. I mean, you kind of got to go to the Pac-12 to really see some interesting stuff. I mean, other than San Diego State, the Mountain West tends to be kind of a one-bid league beyond them. So I'll be interested to get over. And I really want to see T-Mobile Arena with basketball with nobody there. That's kind of a weird way to say it, but I want to see that situation comparative to Thomas Mack with the Mountain West. It's surreal. It's funny. The only thing I've seen from the Pac-12 so far was the women's tournament, and the only one in the building was Raiders owner Mark Davis. So I guess he has some special privileges now that he owns the FBNB team, because he seemed to be the only one in the entire building. He was sitting in the front row.
I love it. Granny, I will see you at T-Mobile Arena. I appreciate you popping on with us.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it, John.
All right. There's Ed Graney, columnist at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, friend of this show. A lot to process there. I want to start with Marcus Mariota because, you know, look, good on Mariota's agent for negotiating a contract that gave him essentially a $20 million deal if he starts six games. So it's difficult for anybody right now to trade for Marcus Mariota. You're paying him $20 million, and you also have to have confidence that the Raiders are probably in this pitch situation with, you know, $34 million over the cap, where the Raiders are going to have to get rid of players. So I think Mariota ends up being released by the Raiders, and then he has the ability to go out and negotiate on the open market. I also think he had been sort of through a whirlwind. I mean, it was a blender. In Tennessee, he had four head coaches. He had five or six offensive coordinators. It never really felt like the Titans had it all together around Marcus Mariota. And I'm glad he got out of there relatively healthy and got an opportunity to sit in a Raiders system for a year and catch his breath and, you know, get healthy and learn a little bit from John Gruden and show that he can still play on that Monday night game against San Diego. So the question becomes, where's the right place for Mariota? And I think there's going to be a number of suitors. And I don't think that the money is as important to Marcus Mariota as the opportunity. Like, I do think enough money is important. But based on how things went in Tennessee, I will not be surprised if Marcus Mariota takes a relatively modest deal after the Raiders cut him and release him. I think that it makes sense for him, for his career and for his trajectory, to be in a situation where he's going to be successful versus maybe the situation where he gets the most money. So keep an eye on that. Graney also talked about Las Vegas. Las Vegas is a problem. For every other city in America that wants a pro sports team, Las Vegas is a problem. They gobbled up an NHL team. It's been wildly successful. They have now, you know, stole the Raiders from Oakland. They will be successful there with Allegiant Stadium. Now the question is, MLB, NBA, how much of a player is Las Vegas? My sense is, like Graney pointed out, that the focus of Las Vegas will be on the NBA. I still think that MLB is going to end up with one East Coast and one West Coast expansion or relocation. And I expect it's going to be somewhere like Nashville or Charlotte in the South or in the East, and it'll be somewhere like Portland or Las Vegas in the West. So keep an eye on that. I do think Vegas is a competitor here, and I think one of the great allies that that Portland would have on an MLB, front would be that the Las Vegas attention or focus might be on attracting an NBA team. I had not considered Henderson, a suburb of Las Vegas, as a potential threat, but I guess we got to worry about that too if we're here. And then finally, March Madness. I said it before, I'm going to say it again. I think every March, one of the great things about college basketball is how wild and wide open everything is. It is not unlike your life. Think about it. You wake up, you probably have a plan for your day. Maybe the plan goes sideways, maybe it doesn't. Maybe you get to everything you want to do, maybe you don't. But, you get a knock on the door and who knows who's there. So March Madness, I think, is going to be that way, especially in a pandemic. I think it's going to be even more volatile, even more unpredictable. I think you're going to have this mix of teams that are inside the bracket that really want to be there and want to win. And you're going to have some other teams that are sick and tired of being tested and having to go through protocols. And, hey, we're not a threat to win this thing anyway. We're a 12 seed. I think you're going to have some teams that bow out. I think Duke's waving of the white flag, so to speak. Duke threw in the towel. They had a positive test from a non-scholarship player, Mike Krzyzewski, who all season long looked like and acted like a coach who didn't want to play basketball this year. His team wasn't very good. He didn't have the motivation. His team wasn't very good. He was questioning it all along the way. Nobody was surprised today when Duke basketball just said, you know what? Yeah. You know, we don't have it in us. You know, we're going to have to bow out here. Remember Krzyzewski in December?
I don't think it feels right to anybody. I mean, everyone is concerned. We made an assessment, or I'm not sure who leads college basketball. You know, it's done by committee. You have oversight committee, you have this committee. And I would just like for the safety, the mental health and the physical health of our players and staff, for their, like, to assess where we're at.
There it is, Mike Krzyzewski. I tell you where you're at.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.